lyssnar på Evas relationspodd som görs av Eva Berlander och Svenska Imagoinstitutet. Den här podden handlar om kommunikation och relationer. Om att lyssna och att bli lyssnad på. Det är så uppenbart att vi behöver se mer av vänlighet och empati. Inte bara inom oss eller mellan oss utan också i samhället i stort. I kommande program så kommer du som lyssnar få möta individer, par, forskare och experter som delar med sig av sin kunskap och sina erfarenheter. För att du som lyssnar ska bli inspirerad och motiverad till att våga testa någonting nytt. Och du hör gärna av dig med frågor eller funderingar. Evas relationspodd hittar du på Facebook och mailadressen finner du på Svenska Imagoinstitutets hemsida. Varmt välkommen på en spännande resa.
Välkommen till Evas relationspodd. Jag heter Eva Berlander. Idag ska du få höra när jag pratar med en mycket nära vän till mig. Hon heter Dr. Pat Love. Pat är också min kollega och medförfattare till en av mina böcker som på svenska heter Du förstör vår relation. Vi befinner oss i Barcelona. Vi har tagit chansen till att blanda jobb med framförallt nöje. Och vi njuter obeskrivligt mycket utav denna vackra stad. Självklart så bad jag henne vara med på ett poddavsnitt. Som alltid så ska du känna dig varmt välkommen att lyssna.
You and I have done so many trainings around the world.
Yes.
And I'm so humbled. I can't even put it into words how much I've learned from you. And how much you mean to me. And during this time, we have also become family.
Yes.
Very close.
Yeah.
And I want the world to know how much I love you.
We can't talk about that or I'll be crying.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
But thank you. And you know it's reciprocal. I feel the same.
And this time you have said yes again to be part of the podcast. And I really appreciate that. Because I think that you have so much in Sweden we would say to send forward, you know, to give away. Mm-hmm. Because knowledge is actually something that is very important for the world. Mm-hmm. And to really to understand what can we do more of and what do we need to do less of. Mm-hmm. So we will have the happiest or the best life we can have. And at this moment, we are in Barcelona, in Spain.
Having a wonderful time.
Yes, as usual. We were supposed to sit on the balcony, but it's too hot outside. So we're sitting in a small room just beside the balcony. I think you should tell the people that are listening, who are you?
Oh, I come to this with 40 years of clinical experience. So I've been working with couples for 40 years as a licensed marriage and family therapist. I started out as a graduate professor in marriage and family therapy. And then my friend, who is also with us here in Barcelona, and yeah. I founded the Austin Family Institute, where we trained therapists, did couples work, did supervision, and provided training and workshops.
Yes.
So that's sort of, and I've written several books. And all related to relationships.
Yeah.
Maybe what's more important when you said about giving information is that I came into adulthood having a very, very narrow and what we might call challenging view of relationships.
Yeah.
So I personally had a lot to learn about relationships. And I often learned about relationships the same way I make toast, and that is first I burn it, then I scrape it off. You know, first you burn it, then you scrape it off. You know, that's how I make toast. And so I learned by many mistakes, and so I was a seeker of knowledge. And so I do agree with you that having good information, good models, good steps to follow is extremely important, especially for us who don't know.
You know, I usually say that I think it's very important to admire people and to pick out the people that you admire, and then also to say what are they doing, or what makes you admire them so much, and also to own that on your own and to say, okay, how does that live in me, and how would it look like if it lived in me, the things that we admire. Yeah. And of course you are one of the people that I really admire.
Well, I think when you admire someone and you look at the characteristic that you admire in this person, the next step is, how does that live in me? Mm. And how can I manifest more of that in me? Mm. And how can I make that show up in relationships? Mm. And I know you and I both have been trained to focus on the positive, because if you don't know anything else from this podcast, I think the takeaway is, number one, if you want to make a change, it's easier to add positives than eliminate negatives. Mm. And I think knowing which positive you want to move toward is extremely important. Mm. But you have to take it down to a personal level, not just admiring it in others. And that's why I love research, because much of my career I have focused on what makes relationships happy and stable. Mm. Not just stable, because if you want to say, what's the greatest predictor of stability, staying together in a relationship? It's money. Mm. You know, that's okay. So there, but what makes them happy? That's very different. And yes, money does make you happy to a certain extent, because poverty is stressful, causes a lot of struggle and problems in relationships. But generally speaking, what makes couples happy and stable, and how can I apply that to my life, has been the goal of my research.
And I think that being positive, or looking at the good things and to make it bigger, that comes easier for some people than others. And I think for both you and me, we're quite positive in our core. It's easier for us. And I've met many couples that have a really hard time doing that because they're stuck in the pain or whatever. Yeah. But also sometimes being positive is not a good thing either, because sometimes you could be so positive that you will never deal with the negative stuff. And that's also something to remember. Yes.
Well, you're talking about my childhood. I used positivity as a form of denial. Mm. I would say, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And in a way, that saved my life, because to really look at how bad it was, you know, meaning abuse and poverty and not having enough to eat. I mean, those were the facts and reality, but I didn't want anyone's pity. So I would act like everything is okay. Well, here's another takeaway, I think. What the coping strategies you use to save your life psychically, mentally, emotionally in childhood can be highly inconvenient in adulthood.
Yes.
Because in adulthood, I might say I'm fine when really I'm lonely, I'm sad, I need your contact, I need your love, I need your affection, I need your kindness. Mm-hmm. So you're right, there has to be a balance and a reality to it to see if it's serving you well and serving your relationship well.
Yeah. I did the same thing as a child. Then I was thinking also that to do that, you have to be able to look at yourself from the outside. I mean, to really to understand what defense system you have, which I call the Armani suit, what suit you have on, you have to be able to see yourself from the outside.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the keys, anyway, in my world, is that we have to be excited about that, not looking at it as, oh, what defenses do I have and so on, but more excited, think, oh, I wonder what defenses I have. Because when we look at it from that point of view, we will open up immediately and we will be curious, and then we get power. We don't feel so powerless. We need to grab the power, because powerless is the worst thing ever. It will make us paralyzed and depressed and so on.
And this objectivity about ourselves that you speak of is almost impossible without relationship.
Exactly.
Because your relationships give you an opportunity to get that objectivity, because the human brain is just overwhelmingly subjective about you. It only sees the world through your eyes. That's all you can do. But when someone else is in your life, then it gives you an opportunity for them to say, oh, but maybe if you were more affectionate, then I would feel more sexual, you know,
exactly.
Or maybe if you use a kinder voice, it would be easier to listen to you. Or being in relationship could give you an opportunity to see what you're blaming your partner for that really lives in you.
Exactly.
Because in relationship, we have the best opportunity to grow up. Mm. We have the best opportunity to see ourselves objectively, because that's someone close to us, and they have the right. And to lose that person, it is frightening.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, if you're in an important relationship, an attached relationship, then you have more incentive and more reason to listen to that person. Because if you don't listen time and time and time again, you may lose the most important person in your life.
Yeah, exactly. And you may lose yourself, because if you don't listen, whether it's to the other person, but then you don't even listen to yourself. You only listen to your defense system, but you don't listen to our needs that are behind that. What would you say is a five-step, very important thing to understand about reaching happiness? It sounds so, I don't know, because happiness, what is happiness? Mm-hmm. But reaching, what we say, content or strength, or what would the five steps be?
Yeah, well, if you want to be content, you have to determine who you are.
Yeah.
You know, what your core values are. Mm. And then live in line with those core values. For example, if one of my core values is being kind, then at the end of the day, I should be able to say, Pat, how are you kind today? And I should have this example and this example. Because otherwise, it's just an ideal. Because contentment comes with living an authentic, congruent life. And what does that mean? It means, here's the person I want to be, and I really am becoming and am that person. I am really, you know, in line with my core values. Otherwise, it's just an ideal, you know. It's just it's a fantasy. But I like the fact that you moved from happiness to contentment, because happiness is not an emotion that's designed to be sustained. It comes in bursts of seconds, like the laughter we hear being here with each other. It'll just be a big burst of laughter, and you're just so happy in that moment. But contentment means, in the big picture, in the overall scheme of things, on from day to day to day, are you contented with your life? And if the answer is no, then you ask, what's one small thing I can do today that would get me in line with the best person I want to be, the best person I can be, that person that lives life in line with the core values, you know? And so, and you say, well, how do I understand my core values? Well, think about people you admire, like you said earlier, and also that, and say, okay, this, why do I admire that person? Well, because they're funny, they're fun, they're responsible, they're consistent, they're honest. Then you say, what's one small thing I can do today that would be more honest? How can I be more honest with my partner? How can I be more honest with myself? But the second thing is, you can ask yourself, when I'm dead and gone, because we're all going to die, how do I want the people in my life, the people I love the most, to remember me? And if I want them to remember me as a supportive person, then on a daily basis, I ought to be supporting them. Mm-hmm. I ought to be doing acts of support, because it's the behavior. It's like we say, that's where the rubber hits the road. You know, that's where you make forward motion. You know, the tire has to get on the road and move forward. Mm. So I think knowing that if you want to be content, and of course, research keeps saying the way to be happiest and content, and also in line with some of your core values, is to be generous and kind to others. Mm. And why is that? Well, because humans only have two major coping strategies that kind of, you know, separate us and make us evolve. And one is we have a big brain. We don't have the biggest brain. We don't even have the most neurons. Other animals actually have bigger brains and more neurons. But we help each other. Mm. And so that means we're in line with being human. So being kind, being generous, helping one another, especially start at home, those people closest to you. You know, make amends, you know, mend bridges. Be the best person that you can be in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this may not happen in Sweden, but in the U.S., they would say, well, why should I be nice when the other person isn't nice?
What happens in Sweden as well.
And I say, here's why. Because you feel better about yourself doing the right thing. Well, what is the right thing? Whatever's in line with your core values.
Exactly.
And also, don't let someone else decide what kind of person you want to be. You be the best partner you can be. You be the best friend you can be. Why? Because that's what makes you content. That's what brings out your best self. So, yes, you can say you're benefiting the other person, but it also benefits you.
I think this is so important. And I've heard it a million times. Why should I be nice?
Yeah.
And I think it comes back again. In my world, it comes back again to the feeling of being powerless or powerful. Mm-hmm. Because if you choose who you want to be and you react by your core values, then you get the feeling of power. I decide who I want to be.
Yeah.
But if you give it away, as you said,
yes,
you're letting other people decide and you get miserable.
Yes.
And then you can keep on blaming others for your own behaviors. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the key things to really get. I decide who I want to be.
Yeah.
And I can do that easily sometimes with people that will react the way I want them to react. And sometimes it's tougher, it's harder, because I'm going to be with a person that doesn't receive the gift that I give it, or they will take advantage of the gift or whatever. And still to be able to come back to yourself and say, well, it doesn't matter really what happens outside of me. It's who do I want to be?
Yes.
Oh, I think this is so important. And you can just imagine what that would do to the world if we got this thing.
Yes. Yes. It's a key. It's a key to, like you say, to contentment, but also to healthy relationships.
Yeah.
And healthy relationships also have to be secure. And what do I mean by secure? Each person is fulfilling the commitments that they have made to the relationship. Because if you and I have a spoken or unspoken agreement that we're going to be kind to each other, then consistently being kind or supportive or generous or honest or available, then that starts to calm me down. So I know I can trust you, because this security is a key to any healthy relationship. And what do I mean by security? Well, we show up physically. And what I mean is, I'm not just, you know, I didn't just cross the Atlantic because you're on this side of the Atlantic. We show up for each other, but also when we're together, we're present. Mm. And what that means is, I'm interested in you. Mm. You know, I tune into you. It's not hard for you to get my attention. Mm. And if you say something, I'm going to remember it because you are important to me. So that's presence. That's showing up. And that builds security. And of course, there's also sexual, you know, fidelity, being faithful. There's also emotionally available and faithful, meaning I can count on you not to all of a sudden just get crazy and yell it and scream at me emotionally and verbally, you know, because, whoa, you can see how that lowers the security. So how that makes a very insecure relationship.
So what would you say to the couples that feel that they live in that kind of insecurity?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you have to say, how committed am I to the relationship? How much am I projecting? How much am I saying, you're not committed, when truthfully I'm not committed? And I know it takes both, you know, because it makes it really shaky. Here, there are three steps to building trust. Number one, say what you're going to do. Number two, do it. Number three, repeat steps one and two.
that's a good thing.
That's how you build trust. You say what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Eva, if I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
Number two, when I say I'm going to be there, I do it. I'm there. And number three, I repeat that. Mm-hmm. You say what you're going to do, and you do it. That builds trust. Mm-hmm. So you've got to start somewhere. And you and I have both worked with couples who are so undecided, and they're ambivalent, and they don't know. I've tried. And I say, okay, how long are you willing to really work on this and to say what you're going to do and do it and repeat that just to see if you can, you know, if this is going to work? Because if you both say you want it to work, then let's get a new strategy. Let's get a new plan. Let's say what we're going to do and do it and start to build that trust. You know, insecurity, there are no small issues when the relationship isn't secure. And I just want to go back to one thing. Financial security is so important. It doesn't mean you have to have a lot of money, but we expect one another to be honest financially. Financial insecurity has its own special terror and fear and anxiety. So we have to live beneath our means. And we have to agree as a couple, how are we going to spend our money, use our money, use our resources? And because we expect each other to be generous within our means. If you have so much more money than I do, and I have a little money, you don't expect me maybe to give what you do, but you expect me to be generous with what I have. And it's not always money. It could be resources. It could be laughter. It could be friends and entertainment, and come to my house. It's humble, but you're welcome here. So this type of security, generosity, the natural response to feeling full, you know, somebody being so generous, is to give back. And so that creates a positive feedback loop. You know, in my friend group, generosity is a commodity. It's the rule. It's not a contest at all. It's more that you just feel so full that you naturally, you know, okay, I only have this much water, but I'll share it with you. You have shared with me so many times. And with couples, it's such a full, contented feeling, not only to feel secure with your emotions and physically, and I don't have to work too hard to get your attention. I don't have to worry if you're going to be sexually unfaithful, unless, by the way, that's our agreement. Some couples have an agreement that you can be sexual somewhere else, or they have an agreement. You spend your money, I spend mine. We don't talk about it. We share in this way, and we don't. So when I say security, it's the agreed upon, you know, ideas that we have to be consistent with. Because people do relationships all different kinds of ways.
Absolutely.
But you have to say what you're going to do, do it, and they repeat it. Mm. So if I say, okay, you have your money, I have my money, no, nobody's business, but we agree on that, no problem. Mm. But I don't expect you to say, okay, what's yours is mine and what's mine's my own. You know?
No, I agree with you. But I think it goes back again to the feeling that I choose who I want to be. You know, when you live in the struggle, it's not safe at all. Mm-hmm. And any subject could be the thing that will destroy it. It could be money, it could be sex, it could be anything. But the thing is to, again, go back to what can I do? How can I be the person I want to be? And of course, if I want to be the person I want to be, and you are giving me something totally different than security for a long time, mm-hmm. of course, I have to ask myself, what am I doing in this relationship? Mm-hmm. And end it,
yeah.
You know? But it's interesting. I just read a book. It's about a girl. She meets a guy. And as a child, she sees her dad beat her mom. And she falls in love with this guy when she's grown up, and she falls in love, and it turns out that he beats her as well. But the thing is, what I think is so interesting in the book is her inner voices, you know, am I going to give more because I'm going to love him so he will be better to me? And the way that she loses her boundaries, can I make this relationship secure enough? Or does it have to be two people that makes the relationship secure? And I think that's the main thing is, first of all, to see ourselves from the outside and say, do I have a tendency to be more codependent than secure,
right.
You know?
Right.
And also, where are my boundaries?
Yes. This dilemma very likely created our profession because a third objective person, and it could be, you know, a priest, a minister, a mentor, somebody that you trust, can look objectively. Because when you grow up, let's just say with abuse, you have to create a defense to survive that. You have to say either that's not, I'm not going to happen to me, or that's not that bad, or you know, if so-and-so hadn't said that, it wouldn't have happened. And, you know, so you have to create a way to calm your nervous system to live with abuse as a child.
Yeah.
So then you grow up, and when that abuse shows up, it's hard for you to be objective about it because your defense comes up and you say, well, if I just tried harder, you know, if I just didn't talk like that, or I know he loves me, they love me, if I shouldn't have done, you know, you just have this crazy conversation. That's where it really does help to, you know, get counseling, to get a person who's, that's their specialty, you know, that can really help individuals, because you know, anyone who resorts to violence in a love relationship, you know, that can't feel good about themselves long term.
Exactly.
In the moment, you feel powerful. Anger is one of the few emotions that will numb shame. You know, and for half the population, If anything makes them look weak, they're not going to do it, they're going to defend, and they're going to be angry about it. You know, there's some situations in relationships that require professional help. And in many ways, it's very dangerous. You know, it's like for me to do my own brain surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a good idea, you know. To do my own brain surgery. You know, I want a specialist. You know, I want a perfectionist. Because these are very complicated relationships. You know, and even though it looks like an obvious answer, well, you're with an abusive person, well, obviously, you leave. It's not that simple. Mm-hmm. And in the U.S., I don't know about Sweden, but if somebody leaves a violent relationship, their chance of getting killed or shot or hurt goes up 75%.
I know.
So the danger is real to stay and to leave. That's why professionals are trained to manage this, that because this is a very, very serious situation.
Yeah, I have seen couples in front of me where I can see, first of all, that they're creating their own nightmare and they blame the partner for it.
Yes.
That's one thing. But the other thing is that for me, it's obvious that these two should not be together because they are destroying their whole life.
Yeah.
But they won't leave each other.
Yeah. Yes.
And having that receiving place to be able to listen to it and to look from the outside a little bit.
Yeah.
Because if you've been fighting for years and years, I'm not talking about physical fight, but arguments.
Right.
Then you get so used to it that you think this is life.
Right. But also, what you're alluding to, you're talking about, is even people who fight and hurt each other physically, etc., are not faithful, they don't have a secure relationship, can still be attached. Mm. And I often say attachment is like oxygen. You don't even think about it. You don't even know it's there until it's cut off. Mm. And so the thought of leaving a person, even if they're abusive or even if we fight and argue, is terrorizing because parts of our brain don't know we've grown up. They don't know I'm this year old and I can take care of myself. So they feel like if I leave, I die. And so that attachment is so strong, even in the most troubled relationships, you know. But you're bringing up another good point, and this is a second point. You know, the first point, if you want a good relationship, security. But the second one is being relational. Can you be objective enough to say, my angry voice, my criticizing, my nagging, my seeing the worst in you, wonder how that affects my partner. And so I ask this question, and I'll ask everybody who's listening this question. What's one word that would describe living with you at your worst? What's one word that would describe living with you at your worst? I mean, if you can jump over into that objectivity and give a word to it, a language to it, then you might get a little view of what it's like being your partner. Because people who have happy, stable relationships are relational. They think as a couple. They have couple think. They literally use the word we and us more. Statistically, they use those words more. You know, they think, okay, well, if I spend this money, you know, what's my partner? Is that an agree? Did we agree on this? What's my partner going to think, feel, you know, about this? Or if I go home late, what's that like for my partner? Just that question. What's it like living with you? You know, because secure, happy relationships are relational. They think like a couple. You know, I did a series that of happy, stable couples. And it's interesting. It's like they were speaking the research without even knowing the research. Because they would say things like, well, they're my best friend. They have my back. They're in my corner. They're on my side. They think about me. They know me. And of course, you and I know they're attached, you know. Because attached people, you know, show up. They tune in. And they tune in to you long enough that they understand you. And then their behavior shows that they understand you because they're relational. They're thinking like a couple. So that's a second marker.
And that's not only couples. That also has to do with friendships or leadership in a company.
Yes.
So, I mean, that relational thing is huge. You need to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes in whatever area in life.
Yes. Yeah, what's it like if I'm the owner and I make 435 times my average worker. What does that say about how relational I am? Mm. What does that say about me as an owner? Mm. Because that's legal. Mm. That's legal.
In the U.S. anyway. Yeah.
So what does that say? Because relationality is one of the markers of happy, stable relationships, you know? Because in smart companies, companies that really are more relational, they want you to enjoy your job. They want you to be rewarded and share in the benefits, feel like a partner that's sharing in the benefits. Mm-hmm. And that comes to a third point that really is extremely important in happy, stable relationships, and that's fairness. Mm. That doesn't mean every day what we do is equal, that I washed the dishes yesterday and you what? No. It means in the big picture, over time, does this relationship feel fair? You know, I often say the best relationships are those that one partner says secretly, privately to their best friend, I have such a good deal. You know, they each think, I got a really good deal.
Yeah.
And the company's the same way. You want to feel like, oh my goodness, this is a good job. Mm. I got a good deal in this company. Because fairness is just, without it, it builds resentment. And resentment leads to, in couples, growing apart. And growing apart is the number one cause of divorce and separation. Mm. Because if it doesn't feel fair, if it doesn't feel equitable, it doesn't, you know, in the big scheme of things, then you start to resent each other. And then you pick.
I usually say that the most important thing for all of us are able to have a receiving place, to be open and to be willing to see whatever good stuff is out there. Again, the good stuff.
Yes.
So if I'm stuck in the dot of problems and I'm stuck in the feeling of being scared.
Yes.
It could be scared that my partner is leaving me or scared that he or she will say things or whatever. Then I'm shutting down.
Yeah.
And then I won't even see the fairness or not fairness in the relationship.
Yes. So now you're coming to number four.
Oh, okay.
Now, it's a good setup. This is why you can tell we worked together many years. Oh. You know, you're setting up the shot for number four, which is flexibility. Mm. Can you be flexible enough to calm yourself, soothe yourself, regulate your own emotions while your partner goes off and does something else? Can I say, okay, I may want it this way, and we've always done it this way, you know, but if you can be flexible enough and adaptable enough and manage change, because rigidity is going to collapse into chaos.
Yeah.
That is a law of physics. Mm-hmm. Any closed system goes into disarray.
Yeah.
If you are so rigid, I have to have it my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. Over time, that's not going to work for you, because life is growth and change. Mm-hmm. If you live long enough, you're going to change the way you look, change the way you feel. The world is going to change. So this flexibility, from as long as we have been researching families and relationships, flexibility has shown up as one of the predictors of healthy, stable relationships. Mm. Can you roll with the punches is sort of a, you know, probably a Western phrase, but can you change, and can you say, okay, I mean, this happened yesterday. Remember, I lost the tickets for us to go to Park Güell. Remember, I couldn't find the tickets. You know, I bought the tickets. I don't know. I didn't get an email. I didn't get the. I couldn't find the paper. Whatever. My partner was saying, well, we could walk back over there. you know, to the information. Well, you know me, I feel like, oh, it's hot, it's long, I'm going to be tired, we only have an hour, and the time is wasting, you know. And then I would go, and I would be complaining and saying to you and looking again, and he would say quietly, well, you know, we could walk over there. So finally, we walked over there. It was so easy.
Yeah.
You know, it was like 15 minutes. Yeah. We were there, we were back, you know. But that requires a flexibility. You know, it was not my first inclination.
No.
Because, you know.
Yeah, but also you were open enough to listen to him after a while. Right. But also he had the ability to regulate himself and not get anxiety, you know, anxiety because of your anxiety.
Right.
So that's very important.
I know he did. Because he would just quietly say, we could walk over there. But you're right.
Yeah.
He was calm. Because if he had been, then I'd have been, I would have been dug in, you know.
And that's what happens all the time, really. You know, when couples are in a fight, it's so contagious, that the anxiety that they go.
But that's why nothing changes unless something changes. If you want the relationship you have, keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because doing what you're doing will get you what you got.
Yeah.
So if you want something different, you have to do something different. And so saying, okay, you could be right. Curiosity, like you talk about that all the time. Be curious. Oh, you could be right, you know, and go. But you have to be flexible. Because you might discover you have a simple answer to a very complex problem that can be solved in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's true.
And that is easy. Couples work is not really couples work. It's the individual's work with themselves and taking responsibility of the space they take a responsibility for their relationship, but mostly for themselves or for ourselves.
Yes. Yes.
Because if you don't know yourself and you don't know your defense system and you don't know, you will project and project and project, and then you will feel powerless, and then, well, we can go on for bad stuff.
And that leads me to the last point, which is happy, stable relationships are vital. They're energized. Because if you're rigid, if you're stuck, it is not a vital relationships. People rarely leave vital relationships. Mm. It's too much fun. It's too enjoyable. It's too enlivening.
Yeah.
It's too uplifting. Yeah. You know, because when you're with somebody that's vital, that's living, that's flexible, and you know they're fair, and you know you can trust them, and they really are thinking not just about themselves, but about you also, that is rejuvenating. It is just so uplifting, it really is a key to that contentment, is having a vital relationship. Because you and I have gone and seen the couples, they may be in a restaurant and they're either both on their phones or they're looking down, they're just absorbed in the food, and you don't know how vital, you know, and it may just be a bad day, who knows. But what I'm saying is, we've all been at a restaurant where this table over here is having so much fun. Oh my gosh. Remember in Gothenburg?
Yeah.
We went to that fancy restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
This restaurant, I have to tell this story.
Yeah.
Do we have time?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the fanciest restaurant, I think, in Gothenburg.
Yeah.
And there was nobody. It was like two or three floors.
Yeah.
They put us at a table. We were having so much fun. And then they brought this couple, this whole big restaurant, and set them right beside us.
Yeah.
And they were so upset because we were having so much
fun. We laughed too much.
We laughed too much, you know? And I think they were just jealous that they weren't over there with us. They should have come over and say, okay, I'm going to join your group because you're having so much fun.
And on the other hand, what they did was ask us to leave because we were too loud.
It's like the whole restaurant. It was a huge restaurant. Mm. You know, when you see somebody that's alive, You know, that's why we like performers and actors and musicians and talented. Yesterday we went to see, you know, the Sagrada Familia. And you see what Gaudí did with these windows and the sharing and the life you could feel when you're in that cathedral and just the art. It's just so uplifting. And this is the way vital relationships are. It's not like
you're on a high. That's also very important to then to really get that one thing for couples or for friends or whatever companies is to make things fun, you know. To put the energy in, how can we help each other have more fun?
Yeah.
How can we get that energy into that space instead of just thinking we should solve problems, talk about this and talk about that and da 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 da. Instead of saying, okay, how can we trigger that in ourselves and in each other?
So I can tell you, people often say, well, I don't know, I don't have a passion. I don't know what's fun. So I can give you a way to decide what your passion is. Here's the way to decide. Think of an activity that, number one, when you wake up in the morning and you know you're going to do this, you anticipate it. You get excited. You look forward to it. Anticipation. Think of an activity that you anticipate. Oh, I'm going to be with my friend Eva. You know, you anticipate it. Number two, this activity challenges you a little bit, either mentally or physically, emotionally. You know, you got to cross the ocean, you got to deal with the airline. You know, it's a challenge. Mm. It challenges you. There's a little bit of challenge to it. You know, I ran a marathon, and yes, I was exhausted physically, but emotionally, you know, spiritually, I was uplifted. So not only do you anticipate this activity, but it challenges you. And number three, when you're doing it, you lose track of time. It's absorbing. You look up and you go, what? We've been talking 40 minutes? How did that happen?
Exactly.
You lose track of time, you know? Mm-hmm. And number four, that when you're doing this, you say to yourself, it's congruent. Mm-hmm. You say, this is exactly what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
What I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And when you find an activity that meets these criteria, then that's probably part of your passion. Now, happy, stable couples support each other's individual passions. Your husband has a passion for motorcycle riding. Mm. And so he can be gone and you support him.
Yeah.
You know, because you're flexible, you know, et cetera. But happy, stable couples support each other's individual passions. But also, if you want to really enliven your relationship and make it more vital, the two of you come up with a joint passion.
Exactly.
And that is an activity that meets these criteria for both of you.
Yeah.
And that's a good exercise. Mm. And because if you want to make a change, it's easier to add positives than eliminate negatives. This is one thing you can do. Now, granted, this may not be the first thing you do if you're in a troubled relationship, but, you know, maybe not. This is a way to assess your relationship. You know, how secure is it? You know, does it feel fair? Do we think relationally? Are we flexible? And also, is it enjoyable? Is it vital? Is it alive? Is it fun? Then that's a way to start. You say, okay, if we're going to start this, we need to start here, you know, because if you've been together a long time, your kids are finally in school or whatever, or they're gone, or you decided we're not having kids, then maybe vitality, you could start there, you know, but this is a way to assess your relationship so that you know where to start adding positives.
Exactly. Oh, you say so many good things. But I'm thinking about what you said about Sven on his bikes, and I think that one thing that we did in our relationship was that when he's away, he sends pictures all the time to me. So then it means that whatever we are doing separately, we will have contact during the day.
Yes.
So I live in his world and he lives in my world, although that we do two different things.
Yes.
And I think that one important thing is to do that, like, we are separate individuals. We have our own
yes.
lives, and that's very important, and our own responsibility for who we are and how we show up and what we give into the relationship. But we also have to be responsible enough to say, how do we share different things? How do we show up for each other? Because if we don't show up, nothing is going to happen.
Oh, if he just went for 3 weeks and never contacted
exactly.
you, that wouldn't be secure.
No, or
that,
if
or
I
relational.
Would, or if I would, as I've done before, criticize him
yeah.
when he did show up,
yeah,
saying,
right.
okay, this is wrong and this is wrong and this
right.
is wrong. So I think that's the word that I would give myself if I would look my worst personality
yes.
in my worst,
right.
you know, that would be I've been criticizing him
yes.
and the
yes.
rest of the world.
Yes. Yes.
And that's interesting. But I think that when you can own it, you can say, okay, how can I shift that?
Yes.
How can I be a person that
yes.
somebody would like to be with
yes.
instead of protect themselves
yes.
for? Mm. Oh, Pat, thank you very much for all this. I love your steps. Is there anything more you want to say, add to this?
No. Let's go have fun.
Yes, we're going to go have fun today in Barcelona again. It's a very nice city to have fun in. It's a beautiful city.
We love it.
Yes, I would say that if you have a chance, go to Barcelona.
Yes.
Thank you, Pat, as always.
My pleasure.
Tack för att du har tagit dig tid för att lyssna på mitt och Pats samtal. Ja, hon är en härlig, klok och generös kvinna. Pat är professor i psykologi och hon har, precis som hon sa under vårt samtal, jobbat med väldigt många par under lång tid. Hon har också utbildat en mängd av terapeuter runt världen. En del av de projekten har vi gjort tillsammans. Är det så att du är intresserad av den bok som Pat och jag skrev tillsammans, så hittar du den på hemsidan eller ute på nätet. Den finns både på engelska och svenska. Är det så att du känner att du har lust att inspireras och du vill lära dig att se dig själv lite utifrån, så att du kan göra mer av det som fungerar och mindre av det som ligger i vägen, ja, då vet du att jag har utbildningar för dig. Eller är ni ett par som säger, vi vill verkligen lära oss att kommunicera? Ja, då har ni hittat rätt när ni tittar på mina distansutbildningar. Eller kanske är det så att du jobbar på ett företag och säger, åh, vi vill verkligen bli mer relationära. Vi vill lära oss att se vad forskning visar, så att vi igen kan bli riktigt framgångsrika i det vi gör. Eller kanske arbetar du som terapeut eller coach och säger, det här med att jobba med par, det vore spännande. Ja, oavsett var du kommer ifrån, så har jag en mängd av utbildningar för dig. Utbildningar som du tar in på distans samtidigt som du hela tiden har live-kontakt med mig, eftersom jag svarar på dina kommentarer. Du hittar alla mina utbildningar på evabelander.com eller på berlanderproductions.se. Ett tips till dig, det är ju att låta det här samtalet landa. Grunna på det lite. Se vad som berörde ditt hjärta och se vad du vill ta med dig och som potentiellt skulle kunna förändra ditt liv och dina relationer. Tack igen för ditt engagemang. Vi hörs.